Hello, Faith.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, thanks. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. As I mentioned in my email, this is just like going to be an episode for a podcast I'm making about wildfires and like spreading awareness about it, what causes it, the effects and stuff. I have a few questions for you, and just so you know, like this is going to be recorded. First off, can you kind of introduce yourself and your job, what you kind of do?
Sure, I'm Tim Martinez, and I'm the land manager and community liaison with the Arroyos and Foothills Conservancy.
Okay, awesome. And can you give kind of like a background on your knowledge about wildfires, like specifically in California, what may cause them and like the effects of them?
Sure. As I'm sure you're aware, there are a number of causes of wildfires in our area. The biggest one, I would say, is to think about disturbance to what we call intact habitat. So that's the native habitat, and the foundation of that is, like, we're talking about different plant communities that historically over time have been disturbed. And when that happens, that sort of opens up an opportunity for what we consider invasive plants. They're sort of like a pioneer species. And so, once the ground is disturbed or the soil is disturbed, you have these plants emerge, and a lot of them were introduced. So they're not native to the area. And that's where a lot of the fire hazard comes from, because the fact that unlike the native plants, they haven't co-evolved, like, in this land with this climate, the Mediterranean type climate we have, and with, like, the other plants and wildlife over thousands and really millions of years, they basically aren't adapted to our climate. And so, like, with a lot of the grasses, like wild oats, or like the mustard that has been introduced, which has yellow flowers, like this time of year in the springtime, they have, like, very shallow root systems. And so what happens is, right now, like, the plants on the land are in their growth phase, because we've had all this nice winter rain, spring rains, and now everything's, like, growing and blooming. But later on, like, when you get into later summer and in autumn, everything dries up. It's the hot time of year. It's the hottest time that we have. And so if those plant roots are just a couple inches in the soil, and that top layer of soil dries out, all of these plants die. They're like annual plants. And so they dry up, they become just dry, like dead brush, and drop all of their seeds. And that's the point where everything becomes flammable. So the first thing I think to think about is how these intact habitats that have evolved to coexist with periodic fires and to recover from that, how all of that was disturbed. And that really opens it up for these, like, flammable, what we call flashy fuels, things that, like, burn up like that and cause a lot of the fire hazard.
Okay, and building off of that, you mentioned how generally different plants might react to wildfires or cause them. Can you elaborate a little bit more on how weather or different types of regions may affect wildfires in California?
How different regions can affect wildfires.
Yeah.
So, like, living near the foothills, for instance, something like that.
Like maybe near the mountains.
Sure, of course. Yeah. So, I mean, the whole reason in the first place that we worry about wildfires is because we build developments, right? And especially because of the pattern in our region of urban sprawl. So we're just building outward into the farthest stretches that we can, and we have, freeways and everything that, stretch out and connect us all. But because of, the urban sprawl, we really start to encroach upon sort of these last wild areas. And a lot of them that are the most fire prone are, like, the foothill communities. So places that are going up against hills, or against, in our region, most notably, it's like the foothills of the San Gabriel Mountains or the Verdugo Mountains. And when you're really kind of encroaching on those areas, and then also, because it's not level, like, fire really likes to burn up. So it makes them, especially prone for those reasons as well. I mean, that's the whole reason that we worry. It's because, our communities, our homes, our properties are, in the, like, the danger zone of these fires. So what we call that region is the wildland urban interface. And so that's, like, where these sort of, end of urban sprawl is pushing up against these steep natural areas that, you know, their habitat is kind of more intact just because they're harder to build upon, right? That's kind of what why the sprawl stops or, you know, nestles into these areas. So definitely those foothill communities and the wildland urban interface are the ones that if you like look on maps of wildfire risk, they're like the darkest red color. They're considered like, you know, the highest fire risk areas in our region.
And this is just me being curious, but would you happen to know, like, what are some of the specific cities that contain most of our wildfires here?
I mean, I would definitely say the foothill communities are the most affected. And so just along like the San Gabriel Mountain foothills, I don't know how far east or west you want to go, but we can think of places like anywhere that's right up against the mountains, Sunland, Tujunga, La Crescenta, right up against the mountains. Altadena especially, you know, is right up there in the mountains. I'm sure like Northern Arcadia, Monrovia, and you can keep going along, you know, the whole San Gabriel Valley that way. And then it's also people who are up against the hills. And so, you know, the San Rafael Hills, you have the communities of Eagle Rock, Glendale, Pasadena, La Cañada, Flint Ridge are all in the San Rafael Hills. And then you also have the Verdugo Mountains. And a lot of that is like Glendale. On the other side, it's Burbank. So these are all either foothill communities or they're areas that are really, you know, kind of, they contain areas that are like right in that wildland urban interface.
And then another question I have for you is, could you talk a little bit about how wildfires might affect or connect to air quality and pollution, animal habitats and families, or endangered species here?
Sure. So let's see, which one to start with? So, what was the first part that you asked? The first part of the question?
How wildfires connect to air quality or pollution.
Okay, I mean, we can start with that one because, you know, of course, like when there's a major wildfire, there's air quality alerts and all of that. And, you know, a lot of times when it's in the mountains, it's burning, you know, natural brush and things like that. But I think that something that we don't consider that can make the air quality even worse than that, which is like the smoke particulates, is if it ends up burning communities, because then, you know, you're releasing whatever like synthetic chemicals and stuff are in homes and houses, you know, people could have in their garage, all types of chemicals and stuff. And then like those are catching on fire, you know, so that can make the air quality even worse is when the fires actually start affecting like, you know, the built environment. And then in terms of species, you know, I mean, there's actually been local examples of wildlife that have unfortunately been injured by fire. And there was one mountain lion I'm recalling from, it was a few years back, 2, 3 years back at least. There was a fire maybe out in Monrovia. And this, I think this mountain lion was nicknamed Monrovia because her paws were all burnt. And I forget exactly where they sent her, but these veterinarians used sort of like this novel approach where they took like fish scales and then they treated the burn marks on the paws with fish scales. And then that helped, you know, more of a speedy recovery. And then they re-released her and she actually traveled. I think they released her further west somewhere. So maybe like in Tujunga or somewhere like that. And she actually traveled the length of the foothills to go back to like Monrovia Canyon where she was from. And she was caught on like several wildlife cameras. So, you know, it definitely affects all of the wildlife. And I'm not sure about any specific endangered species that might be affected by wildfire. I mean, I'm sure anything we have in the region would be. But, you know, what comes to mind is like even, you know, sensitive species like amphibians and stuff, you know, even they can be affected by the aftermath of a fire up in the mountains because then the next thing that happens, you know, after when you get the rains the next year are the mudslides. And, you know, and there's all the dead trees that got burned by the fire. And so you have this, you know, massive amount of logs that get washed down the river and stuff along with all the sediment. So that can affect like, you know, amphibian populations and other sensitive species.
Yeah, that's really sad. Moving on from that, would you happen to know, like off the top of your head, could you name one or two wildfires that had a significant impact on California and how they affected our land? One example would be, this was a while back. I'm not sure what year it was, but I know there was one called the Campfire in Butte County, which was a pretty significant one. So like something related to that.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple examples that come to mind. The first one for me that was the most significant for me, excuse me, was the 2009 station fire. Because before that, like I really had been exploring the San Gabriel Mountains for years, mostly like Angeles National Forest, and getting to know these places, these canyons intimately, and camping out there. And then, I saw the fire happen, and in the aftermath of the fire, a lot of these places were just like totally transformed. And just looked completely different. I didn't recognize the place. And then I had the opportunity to actually watch this massive recovery, because the station fire was the largest fire in LA County history, and it burned half of the San Gabriel mountain range. So it was a really huge fire. But then I got to see throughout the whole mountain range like the recovery, and there were plants popping up that like biologists thought were invasive because nobody had ever seen them before. The poodle dog bush, it's called, and it still grows out there. It's actually really pretty, I think. It has like purple flowers, but it supposedly gives you a worse rash than poison oak. So people try and avoid touching it. But seeing just that recovery was, just really sort of amazing itself. And and it continues like to this day. So that one was sort of personally significant for me, just living around here. The other one in California history, I think would definitely be, I don't know the name of the fire. And the sad thing is, I feel like it's at a point where it's hard to even keep track of them. There's so many fires in California. Like I just kind of forget when and all their names. But the one that happened up in Paradise, that kind of took out that entire town in
Oh,
Northern
I think that's
California.
the campfire, yeah.
Yeah, campfire. Yeah, that sounds right. So, and I think that was started by like some sort of electrical lines. And so one of the electrical companies was sort of on the hook for that. And then a consequence from that that I think affects us even locally is that now all of these power companies, like I don't know if it's Edison or these different companies that have like power lines coming through, they're just like overzealous with the tree trimming now. And that's like in people's neighborhoods in these foothill communities. And so I know that definitely like up in Altadena, people have been very upset and very up in arms because of how heavy-handed these tree crews have been, but it's because they don't want to be responsible again for like any sort of fire, So it's definitely had ripple effects throughout the state.
Yeah, I remember because my dad told me about that one and how his friend was actually in the fire, but luckily he was a survivor. And he recommended me this Netflix documentary about the campfire, and it was just so heartbreaking because I remember watching this one part in the documentary where there were children in buses and they were just trapped in there, and the teachers were like praying that they would die of ash and smoke inhalation instead of being burned, and it was just
And that's like horrific, honestly.
very sad. And so another question for you, how would you say wildfires have maybe progressed over the years in California? Like, have they increased, decreased?
I don't personally have memorized any sort of, figures about that or any data, but I think we all can agree they seem to be increasing. I mean, we were just kind of talking about that, it seems like it's hard to keep track of them all at this point. So I do think they're increasing. And the more that I see land that's been disturbed or even neglected in a lot of ways, and some people say that a lot of our sort of natural areas are, I think a lot of them are underfunded, and they're pretty neglected, and you get a lot of material. Dry, dead trees and undergrowth and everything that builds up, and it makes for, more of a problem. So, I think it's increasing.
And would you happen to have any knowledge on how California wildfires might compare to wildfires anywhere else in the US?
I mean, we're sort of in the West, but something that's been surprising for me to see, and I think that we're all kind of familiar with the wildfire situation in the West. You have a lot of like conifer forests that catch on fire. Where we live, it's the chaparral. But I've been surprised to see fires happening like I'm trying to think of a specific area, but further east, when they have fires in New York and stuff, like New York State, things like that, or Canada, I mean, I remember a few years ago there was like all these fires across North America, and that seems surprising to me because it just seems like a more lush green environment out there. I don't really associate like out east like that with wildfires, but it seems like maybe that's becoming more of a thing.
And that just proves how much wildfires are increasing over the years as well. So I just have one more question for you to kind of close this off. Can you talk about some ways to prevent wildfires from happening or provide advice in what to do in the midst of one? As in, like, what are some ways people can take precaution?
Probably the most relevant thing to talk about is used to be called brush clearance, and at our conservancy we called it fire fuel reduction for a long time. Now we're really trying to look at environmentally sensitive vegetation management. So basically, brush clearance, but in a way that preserves the native plants. And a lot of these are actually fire resistant. They're evergreen and they resist. Just burning up like those flashy fuels that we were talking about. But we do have like obligations, at least on our nature preserves, and a lot of private homeowners in the foothill communities that we were talking about, they have these brush clearance like obligations to the county or the city or whoever, for their homes, protect their residences. And so the way that you do that, I think, is very important. Something that we're trying to do is like, there's a plant called laurel sumac that grows in the chaparral, and a lot of times people clear cut it. It has a sort of a reputation as a flammable plant, but we know that it's evergreen and that it really is a fire resistant plant. And it's really the stuff that grows underneath that becomes dry and dead that creates a lot of the fire hazard. So we excuse me, we work to suppress all of those flashy fuels. We mow them when we have to. One approach that I really recommend to all home gardeners that we've been using with great success is called sheet mulching. So we're actually laying down cardboard and then covering that, and we're overlapping the cardboard so that weeds can't sprout and like, grow basically. We're blocking their sunlight. And then we top it with like a heavy layer of mulch. It could be like 6 inches of mulch. And then, eventually, after it's suppressed all of the seeds, the cardboard will decompose and break down, and all of that mulch and stuff will become really good topsoil. But it's a way that we can suppress those flashy fuels in those weeds and actually tend and encourage the native plants and shrubs and trim them, take out the dead undergrowth and basically maintain them well. And then we're going to have a landscape that is holding moisture in the soil, so it's not like all dry and dead. You don't have those flashy fuels. You have space because the trees are limbed up and the dead undergrowth is removed and chipped and or whatever. You have basically space where the only thing that you have is pretty much evergreen. And so it's everything can be flammable, but it's more of a fire resistant and even a climate resistant landscape. And so that's sort of the main approach that we're trying to do and we're trying to learn more about, and that we encourage other people, like in their home gardens and stuff, to do is try to figure out how you can maintain a fire resilient landscape that also is providing habitat.
Okay. Thank you so much for answering all of my questions. I think that's all I have for now. Do you have any last words or comments that you want to share before I close this off?
No, just thanks for talking, and thank you for your interest in this topic.
Of course. Thank you so much, Tim.
Okay, take care.
Thank you.